Hello, and welcome to the East Anglian Theatre Podcast. Yes, it's me, Ray Tempesta, the host of the aforesaid East Anglian Theatre Podcast. Back once again, much like the Renegade Master, ready to soil the airwaves with my ill behaviour. For those who haven't listened before, well, there's a whole lot of nonsense that you haven't missed out on, so not to worry, you're here now. In every episode, I do what I can to promote the most excellent theatre that's going on our respective doorsteps, assuming that our doorsteps are somewhere in the East Anglian region. The way the podcast works is simple. It's split into three parts. Part one is where I tell you a bit about what I've been up to in the world of theatre. Part two is what you're here for, really, the main feature, the pièce de résistance, the interview. And we wrap it up with the third part, where I let you know about some of the upcoming shows and the occasional audition opportunity in the region. That's all coming up, of course, but first, let me tell you about the podcast social media stuff. I have a half-assed presence on most platforms. However, some exciting news this week, and by exciting, I mean actually irritating. My Facebook account has been hacked. Woohoo! So I no longer have a presence on Facebook. Now, in truth, I'm sort of relieved, as it means one less account to bother with. But obviously, there's a slight concern that something untoward might be happening with my account when it's out of my control. I guess just bear in mind that if you do follow the page and it's somehow still active, there might be some content on there that has nothing to do with me. But let's hope not. However, you can still follow on Instagram, TikTok, and X. If you're on any of those platforms, do consider giving the page a like, a follow, a share, or whatever. Now, I'm not sure what good it does, but other people far more successful than me promote their stuff that way, so it seems like an advisable thing to do. There's also a website for the podcast, eatpod.co.uk. That's eatpod.co.uk. Here you'll find all episodes of the podcast, plus written versions of the reviews that I produce, and a page to contact me if you want to be featured on the podcast, or simply want to tell me how to recover my Facebook account. Anyway, enough of my nonsense, here's section one, and in the absence of anyone who gives a shit enough to ask me, I rather pathetically have to ask myself, Ray, what have you been up to theatre-wise lately? Well, with my schedule clear, performance-wise, over the last few weeks I've had the chance to take in a fair bit of theatre myself, for which I've produced a handful of reviews, all available to read on eatpod.co.uk. I caught outdoor touring productions from two companies that I've previously featured on the podcast, Quill and Inkling and Strange Fascination Theatre. Both were brilliantly bonkers and entertaining original adaptations. And then at the opposite end of the spectrum, not in terms of quality but in terms of content, was Sewell Barn Theatre, whose production of The Cemetery Club was more of a tearjerker but was sensitively handled by the production team. What wasn't sensitively handled was the Nimmo Twins comedy show, which I watched at the Playhouse. Now, I didn't actually bother to review it, not least because it was already sold out, so my review was very much surplus to requirement, but also because there wasn't much in the way of positives to report. It was all quite tired old material, which the audiences seemed to appreciate, but I got the feeling these same audiences have stuck with them for the last 20-odd years, so they were very much preaching to the converted, as it were. Some of it was genuinely funny, but some bits felt like they were playing into the hands of an audience of perhaps like-minded individuals. And I'm stereotyping here myself, but the audience was mostly straight white people aged 50+, so mocking people's choices of pronouns and deliberately getting the letters of the LGBTQ+ community incorrect, as if that wasn't tired and cliched material already, was somehow deemed acceptable and funny. Now, I was very surprised that they chose that quite needless poke at an already victimised community, and given that Norwich Pride was happening just a couple of days afterwards, they were a case in point as to why Pride marches are still needed. It felt very at odds with a message that one of their characters in the show was preaching about tolerance and acceptance. I certainly won't bother watching them again. Now, if you happen to catch any of these shows, why not let me know what you thought about them? Get in touch with me on my social media channels, and I'll do my best not to ignore you. Okay, well, that's section one safely navigated, and on to section two, the interview. And this time, I'd like to introduce you to the co-director of Reflex Theatre, who are based in Norwich. His name is Callan Duran, and he's set to be part of an original production called Call Me John, which will be hitting the stages of Halesworth, Beccles and Bungay next month. So, without further ado, let's have a chat with Callan, shall we? Thank you. Hi there, Callan. Lovely to have you on. So first of all, can you introduce us to Reflex Theatre and what the company is all about?
Yeah, definitely, Ralph. Lovely to be on here, and thank you very much for inviting us on. So Reflex, we started up 8 days before Boris decided to lock us all inside in 2020, which was an amazing foresight in business planning. We kind of were born out of not necessarily just a response to the pandemic and looking at what people needed in terms of a lack of theatre. And a lack of a creative engagement. But we saw very, very quickly that there was going to be a lack of community, there was going to be a lack of education, a lack of outreach. And obviously, as theatre artists and as trained actors and writers and directors, we thought, well, what we're going to do for our first couple of years is base ourselves within that education and outreach remit. So we did a lot of development work with new artists, new writing, new work. We created quite a lot of shows for schools around the RSHE curriculum, around substance misuse and child sex exploitation. We looked at the issues that we felt Norwich and Norfolk and East Anglia especially were really kind of struggling with, and we wanted to create not just pieces of theatre but content, educationally, training, whatever it may be, that engaged people, inspired, and hopefully created a little bit of a better path for young people, old people, individuals within East Anglia. That's kind of the reason that we got going and came into existence.
And you touched upon it just there about promoting new writing and new material. You obviously got the Whip It Up events that happen regularly. What can you tell us about those and how have they been going? There was, at the time of recording, there was one last night.
Yes, there was. So Whip It Up is our work in progress nights, hence WIP, Whip. Clever wordplay. Thank you. Thanks, Meg, my managing director, for that. Beautiful. Whip It Up is kind of a second iteration of one of the ideas and one of the very first things that Reflex did during the pandemic, which is what we originally called our short form Scratch Nights, which was predominantly about taking theatre scripts from writers from all over the world and saying to those writers, we want to do Scratch Nights a little bit differently. So you give us the first page of your script /scene that you want us to, you know, perform and have a look at. And also then just give us the last page. We don't care about the middle bit because we will improvise the middle bit. So that became a bit of an ideas generator and an opportunity for writers to kind of see if their first and last page had a strong enough through line that we would get the idea and that hopefully their story would be clear enough. But it also gave them an opportunity to actually see new ideas, new characterizations, new things that they hadn't maybe have thought of before, so they could infuse that into the script. That went really, really well for a year or so. But as we were starting to come back from online content and into more traditional offline theatre spaces, we found very, very quickly that the Scratch Nights were only being watched and were only engaging just fellow industry professionals. And we felt that the work that was being created in those actual nights weren't necessarily serving the people that we said that we wanted to set out and engage with. So we had a think and went, okay, so what if we take it outside of just theatre scripts and just plays? What if you have a look at every single art form and think, how can we not only promote that new work, but offer a night for regular Joe public in Norwich to actually experience a night of culture, variety night of culture? That's where Whip It Up came from, was born from. The essence of the Scratch Nights to keep trialing new work in that safe space and, you know, exposing artists to audiences and developing those new ideas, but also creating a really lovely mix of styles and artists for audiences to engage with. So that's where Whip It Up is kind of born from. And we're really excited that it's now got to a stage where we're pretty much doing a Whip It Up every week in different venues across the city, and kind of building up our little, I'm calling it the Pantheon of Whip, where we just kind of build acts through the different sizes of venues. So yeah, it's been really, really lovely to just kind of see that develop this year and shoot off, especially within the second half of the year, and long may it continue.
Hmm. I know, having seen one of the previous nights there at the Louis Marchese, where else are you performing the Whip It Up nights?
So we've got three regular venues now. We've actually upgraded from the Marchese simply because we found that the space, we were starting to sell out just too much. So we've upgraded the space to the St. Andrew's Brew House, just opposite Cinema City. We had a really lovely night last night at the Norwich VR Escape Rooms. And they're an established venue, don't get me wrong, but a lot of people don't realise that they are a venue for hire for arts and culture events as well, which is really nice to just kind of open up that conversation, open that awareness up. We have also just struck a deal with the UEA to use their drama studio, because it would be quite nice to have that as what we're calling like a ground zero, to say anyone who's starting out, like a student, especially if you're a student or a student company who's got brand new work that necessarily isn't ready for the public audience just yet, but we want to trial that out in the safest space possible in a university. Then when we feel like it's okay, let's get you out in front of the public in a 20, 30 seat venue like the St. Andrew's Brew House. Bang, that's lovely. Okay, now that you feel confident within that venue and you've polished it, let's get it to the VR rooms when you've got potentially 70, 80 people potential there. And it's just that kind of build up that we're looking to kind of see.
And creating a little segue here, I gather you tried out a little bit of the material from Call Me John at Whip It Up thing last night. So moving on to Call Me John, can you tell us about the production itself and the thought process behind its creation?
Yeah, well, it depends how long you've got, really, because the thought process for Call Me John was, I'm not going to lie, 17 years in the making. So Call Me John was inspired by my great-grandfather. He passed away in 2014, and before he did so, he actually managed to write down the story of his life. He started on the 8th of September in 2006, and he was writing down the stories and memories of his life. And what he said to me and the family was that he was really worried that he was going to be forgotten. And that obviously struck a chord because, you know, my great-grandfather. But what I kind of had in the back of my head, and I always wanted to do, was kind of go, okay, I will make sure that not only are you not forgotten, but that something is done with this story, that the legacy and the things that you've taught me, the inspirations, the little treasures of advice, just the whole spirit of my great-grandfather and that generation is honoured and celebrated. Fast forward 17 years. It's taken a while to get to this point because not only have I had to develop as a person, as an actor, and obviously Reflex had to be set up and the right moment had to come so that we could actually do this. And the right moment came when East Suffolk Council very, very kindly gave us a grant as part of the UK Shared Prosperity Fund to celebrate not just this story that we're doing, but celebrate the lives of local residents, specifically within Bungay, Beccles and Halesworth for this round of touring. Because what we've not only done is use the story of my great-grandfather as inspiration, we've gone around the entirety of those towns and wider East Suffolk locale and had wonderful chats and wonderful conversations with local residents, local community groups, local, everybody, and just gathering those stories, gathering those memories from old generations, young generations, and not just talking about the past, but looking at what these generations want to do for the future and what they kind of see their towns being in the future. One of the things that we saw very, very quickly was that there was a big, big gap between, let's say, the generation kind of in within their 70s and 80s now, and the teenage generation, especially between like 16, maybe even going up to my age, to be fair, 30, because in that age bracket, let's be honest, your grandparents or great-grandparents, they might not be around anymore just because, you know, life and death unfortunately happens. So we wanted to celebrate not only the stories of people in Bungay Beckles Halesworth, honour my great-grandfather, bring those generations together. This feels like a huge culmination of 17 years. And it has been a joy to write the script, to see it being written by my wife Megan, who's the managing director of Reflex, and is the most talented writer on the planet. And just seeing all these little puzzle pieces drop together, it's been beautiful, and we're really excited to, well, as of time of recording, we're about a week away from rehearsal, and to actually see it come together. I'm absolutely terrified, but I'm absolutely buzzing.
And the script itself, you've mentioned the story celebrating local people from Bungay, Beckles and Halesworth, but what are the actual themes of the stories themselves? Is there any particular common theme that runs through it?
The common themes are looking at how one person's experiences can relate to a completely different generation. So without giving too much away, John obviously relates a lot of his experiences and relays a lot of his experiences of the war to his grandson, Ashley. And the hope is that John's stories inspire Ashley, and that Ashley can find some kind of identification or relation with the stories, or just find something that they can kind of hook onto, so that there's a little bit more of an understanding of the characters between them. Because they start out, I mean, don't get me wrong, they are, you know, grandson and, you know, great grandfather, but actually they start out almost kind of alien to one another. It feels very separate. It feels quite disjointed how they start out. And there are some experiences from Ashley's side where he talks about being vegan, for example, or he talks about things that in the modern era, especially technology is a big one that we've spoken to a lot of older communities that they still kind of don't understand and grasp. And it's just finding experiences in both generations and how we kind of bridge that gap so it becomes easier to understand each other. And I suppose one of the other things that we've looked at is actually the concept of trauma as well. John's character obviously went through the Second World War. Ashley has gone through his own trauma, not just personally, but we're looking at the differences between what a personal trauma is in terms of, let's say, losing a loved one, and then a generational trauma of a massive event that kind of happens to a large group of people. I'm immediately thinking, I'm just going to rattle off some off the top of my head, the IRA bombings in the 70s, and well, that whole period and the Troubles. Obviously, the Windrush generation have got that generational trauma. The financial crisis of 2008. Obviously, we've got the pandemic as well. And it's just looking at how we identify in our own generations with our trauma and how we deal with that, but also how we link up with other generations and kind of understand them and just, I know I'll keep using the phrase, but bridge that gap. Mm-hmm. to just gain a little bit more of a cohesive, shared understanding.
And once Megan got hold of the stories, how much influence did those that contributed their stories have? I mean, obviously not expecting you to write by committee, but how much input have they had to the finished product, as it were?
It has been a real interesting journey to fit all of these puzzle pieces together. Megan has looked at all of these stories and has created some beautiful original dialogue and conversations between this fictional ideation of, you know, let's say my great-grandfather, for example, or John, and Ashley, who is an ideation of someone, let's say, of my age or what someone would be in like 2008, 2009, this that, and the other. And we've tried to remove as much of the original character of my great-grandfather. I don't just want to just celebrate my great-grandfather on stage and go, look at me, he was great, because we want it to be everybody's grandfather. We want it to be everybody's grandchild on stage. And it has been a real journey, and it has felt like a bit of a wrestling match to kind of figure out how much of John's experiences do we put in, how much of the local stories do we put in. Some of them are even just referenced in a line. Some of the stories and experiences that we've talked about have literally just been a quote, a direct quote from what someone has said to us in conversation, and we've gone, that's a lovely thing you've just said, I'm gonna write that down and we'll see if we can put it in. Some necessarily haven't been direct quotes, but there have been times where we've watched people tell these stories and we've noticed a character trait, or we've noticed a way of thinking or a viewpoint, and we've gone, we're going to note that down. That's really interesting. What if we give that to the actors to put in as a character trait for John or for Ashley? So it's a case of not just cramming in everything, because it will just become a hodgepodge mess, but finding the script to have enough depth and enough honoring the stories that we kind of chose to select. But the ones that haven't been directly in there, chosen to be as a quote or part of the verbal script, how we put that in somewhere else, whether it's part of the set or whether it's part of the music, like a musical flourish that someone's mentioned. There's a lovely story, actually, that someone that we spoke to in the community mentioned that they were stationed in Lanciano in the war in Italy, and they went to go and see Sandy Powell, the famous comedian in like the 40s and 50s. It was huge. And what we did was do a bit of research, actually, to see if there were any footage of Sandy Powell. And we actually came across this beautifully hilarious act that Sandy Powell did. And we decided, you know what, actually, let's see if we can pay homage to that. Let's see if we can put that in and see how one's idea of comedy might transfer into another generation and just kind of see how that might work. I know I've rambled on a little bit here because it has been a little bit of a journey to bring all those puzzle pieces together. And I'm not going to lie, I'm still figuring them out because as we go into rehearsal, it's bringing it all together. But it's just been a joy to let that kind of happen.
Mm-hmm. So once it is all brought together, what do you hope or even it, sort of anticipate that audiences will take away from the performance?
We want them. I mean, first of all, a lot of people are going to need tissues because we've read this so many times, and it is a beautiful script. It's heartbreaking in parts, but it is so joyous in parts. Equal measures making people cry. We sent it through to one of our board members, and they're quite, you know, a burly, manly, Conan Barbarian kind of man. And he just sent me two words on a WhatsApp after he read it. He just said, I'm broken. I'm just like, oh, what have we created? What we want people to kind of take away is, how are we going to connect generations up? What If you walk out of that theatre and you see something in the character of Ashley in that young person role that you didn't think you would originally have seen in a typical young person before, how are you going to allow that to just plant a seed of a new viewpoint towards that younger generation? If you are a young person who hasn't had much experience of being around old people, or you have got a certain idea of what old people are like, is there something that you see in the character of John and the relationship that he's trying to build with his grandson that hopefully you can take forward into your, you know, further building of friendships and relationships outside? We've got a really lovely initiative that we're running alongside this, where we've opened up not only the rehearsal room for people to kind of, you know, join us and kind of, you know, put their own two cents as well into the piece. But as part of the production, there will be like a little area for local charities, local organizations, local services, and local initiatives to just have basically free promotion. So that if someone comes to the show who is, let's say, of an older generation and has been struggling with isolation, due to, you know, obviously the effects of the pandemic, or just because they've been bereaved recently, or what have you, or if they're a young person with no sense of direction, we will have an area where hopefully there will be a local organization they weren't necessarily aware of before, but they can pick up a leaflet, they can get in contact, and they can have that first contact to move forward and do whatever they wanted to go and do, whether it be, I don't know, scouts or the men's shed, which there's some lovely ones of in Beckles, Bungie and Hales for thinking about it. Or even if it's just the local community support organizations in the area. That's one thing that we're desperate to make sure that we have, that kind of forward movement from audiences, that kind of social mobility.
And so the performances are on the 5th, 6th and 7th of September?
Yes, so it's the 5th of September at the Halesworth Cup. That's the world premiere. So you're welcome, Halesworth. The 6th of September is the Beckles Public Hall, and the 7th of September is the Fisher Theatre. If this goes well, and I will make sure this goes well, we do want to take these stories East Anglian wide.
That's going to be my next question, really. Is there any plans for it beyond the three dates in Suffolk? Because it occurs to me there'll be plenty of people elsewhere that have got similar sort of tales to tell and things to contribute as well. But is it something that you would be adapting for audiences elsewhere? You know, obviously these ones are tales that are perhaps, I don't know whether they're necessarily resonant with people of Beckles, Bungie and Halesworth, or whether it would need to be adapted for audiences elsewhere.
Do you know what? It was one of those things that we were talking about in the development process, and kind of going, okay, do we need to mention like specific road names, specific streets, specific events in the history of Bungie, Beckles, Halesworth? And we went, well, actually, if we're not... So let's take my great-grandfather, for example. He mentions a lot of Saxmundham, Leyston, Aldborough within his stories, because he lived in Beckles for a majority of his later years, about 20-30 odd years, even longer than that, thinking about it. But when we talk about Beckles, Halesworth and Bungie residents, they didn't necessarily have been born solely there and lived all their lives there. There's a lovely mixture of maybe an East Anglia intersectionality, where they've come from Cromer or Ipswich or whatever it may be. So for us, we were kind of going through the script, we'll go, okay, I think we'll mention maybe a couple of place names just to kind of help the reference point for people. But if we were being like very, very specific with it, it almost feels like, again, we're just looking at just one person's story rather than making it as a representation of everybody's story. So if we are going to places like Saxmundham or Leyston, or even Cromer, we want it to feel like that those places feel honoured and those stories feel honoured simply because the stories that have kind of come from those communities have been infused into the store, into the script, not just by going placeholder name here, almost like John Godber, replace name of town, replace 2006 reference, replace whatever it may be.
Yeah.
But just making it open enough so that it feels like everybody from East Anglia can get involved, rather than having it kind of restricted to name town here.
And more generally, what are your plans for Reflex Theatre, perhaps beyond Call Me John, if that's not too, you know, if that's not looking too far ahead?
No, not at all. I mean, we're 3 years old, and I'll be honest, I have no plans of being in the space that we are right now. We've been really, really fortunate and really lucky to not only develop the work we have done before, but to be given amazing community projects and funding for those projects to enable effectively me to be full-time Reflex for the past 2 years, which has been able to supercharge our development, our project ideas, but also, you know, the grounding, the baseline of running a theatre company and the business and organisational stuff. That's been, this year, that's been a challenge. But for us, we want to be, I mean, this might sound a bit big-headed, apologies, listeners. One of my biggest inspirations as an emerging artist growing up was actually Gecko in Ipswich, because they came. I trained in Derby Theatre. I'm kind of a mudblood. I was born in East Anglia, but I lived quite a lot of my early life in the Midlands. And Gecko came and performed not only Missing, but Institute as well, kind of 2013, 14, that kind of time. And they did a couple of masterclasses and workshops for us. And I was just like, yep, you are amazing, top inspiration. And Gecko are one of the best companies in the world, and they're East Anglian, and they're Ipswich. When I was looking at where we were going to place Reflex and where we were going to put Reflex in this whole kind of, you know, ecology of the nation's art sector, Norwich felt quite obvious for us, because not only is Norwich, you know, my home, it is also where I met my now wife. But I also look at the Norwich theatre ecology and I go, you've got brilliant venues, Norwich. You're full of them, absolutely full of them. But when I think about the amount of producing theatre companies of a similar level to what Gecko are, I can think of Frozen Light. And I, off the top of my head, cannot think of anybody else. I can think of people like Quill and Inkling, beautiful. Strange Fascination Theatre. I can think of even Red Duck Productions, companies that have been going around for a while and they're not necessarily in terms of Gecko level. I don't mean that in terms of quality. I mean that in terms of profile. And I'm like, why has that never happened in Norwich? So for us, Reflex, I want to be at that Gecko level. I want Norwich to have at least one company, whether it be us or whether it be one of the others that I've mentioned or anybody that I've not even thought about or even heard about yet. We want there to be a production company in Norwich that is able to hit that Gecko level, can be a beacon of creativity, and that can just kind of spread into the grassroots. That's my vision for Reflex. I know that we're still very, very early doors, and I think it's lovely that people are kind of figuring out who we are a little bit. If we get to Gecko level, I would die a happy man. But for us, that's kind of been like the grand vision for us. As long as we're doing the work that we always set out to do, as I said, right at the start of the podcast, that we're engaging educationally, we're engaging creatively, we're engaging in communities locally, That's the massive thing for us, because if you don't have a strong education outreach department and you actually don't talk to your community and you don't talk to the people who you are going to be performing to, in my view, you don't have a theatre company.
Having only been going for, you know, 3 years or so, it sounds like you're doing things right to begin with. So you've got a good solid grounding.
No, it's been a challenge to kind of get to this point, because it has been juggling so many balls up in the air. Because, you know, yes, I've been able to be full time, but obviously as a freelancer, and, you know, doing proper day jobs, you know yourself, right? Trying to kind of fit it all in and juggle it all in and make sure that this is building to where we want to be. I won't go too much into this because there's another podcast entirely. But I think the only thing that's holding us back is just capacity and the infrastructure, and the money. If I had $100,000 a year, I'd be paying lots of people to build not only the profile but the family of Reflex. So can we have more money, please, Arts Council for Norwich?
Okay. Well, just in terms of how people can get hold of tickets for, is it a case of getting in touch with the individual venues, the Cut, the Beccles Town Hall and Fisher Theatre?
They can do. So you can either go on the individual venues website or call the individual venues box office. I can't remember the numbers off the top of my head, but I know it's thecut.org.uk for Halesworth, BecclesPublicHall.co.uk for Beccles, obviously, and thefishertheatre.org.uk. Or if you want to make it simpler, we have actually got links to all of those venues on our website, which is reflextheatre.co.uk/callmejohn. And if you do want to give us a follow on Facebook, X, as it's now called, Instagram, TikTok, whatever the other ones are, can't remember, I'm 30, I don't know anything about social media, then please do give us a follow at Reflex Theatre, because we'll be posting about Call Me John pretty much every single day. You'll be sick of the sight of it. But please do come along and watch and join us for this celebration and for this culmination of local lives, local histories, and bring some tissues. It's going to be an emotional night.
Fantastic. Well, I wish you the best of luck with, well, the rehearsals once they start, and then obviously the performances themselves.
Thank you very much, Ray. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for having us on.
So there we have it. That was Callan Durrant of Reflex Theatre. Now, if you'd like to watch Reflex in action, you can do so at the Cut in Halesworth on the 5th of September, the Beccles Public Hall and Theatre on the 6th of September, or the Fisher Theatre in Bungay on the 7th. As Callan said, tickets are available direct from the venues, but it's probably easier and probably better for Reflex's algorithm to find ticket details via reflextheatre.co.uk. Now, what else is coming up in the region in the next few weeks? Well, here's where not having Facebook scuppers me somewhat, as it's usually the main source of my research. So from memory, I can tell you that the Spotlights musical, which is a completely brand new production, written by India Crittenden and Casey Duval, is set to open at the Madder Market in Norwich on the 15th of this month, and it's there on the 16th too. You can catch it at the Players Theatre in Lowestoft on the 25th and 26th of August. Links for all tickets are available via spotlightsmusical.co.uk. You can also listen to the episode featuring India and Casey where they talk about the show. It's episode 40, in case you're interested. My friends over at Open Door Theatre are holding auditions for their new musical production called Space Hamlet. They'll be doing some stage readings of it in late November. You can find out more about the production on their social media pages, and the deadline to audition is the 30th of August. In Suffolk, at the Theatre Royal Bury St Edmunds, you can catch their in-house production of The Wonderful Wizard of Oz. It obviously needs no introduction, except to tell you that it's on between the 18th of August and the 2nd of September. Tickets for that are available via theatreroyal.org. What else? Yes, of course, if you've not had the chance to catch Quill and Inkling doing Don Quixote, there's a chance at the weekend as they close their summer tour at the Deering Windmill on the 20th of August. Tickets for that are available via quillandinkling.com. And also touring the region is Strange Fascination Theatre with their original adaptation of Lewis Carroll's Alice Through the Looking Glass. There's a couple of chances still left to see them. They've got the Carlton Marshes Nature Reserve in Lowestoft on the 19th of August and the North Walsham Memorial Park on the 25th of August. Have a look on Strange Fascination's social media pages for details of how to book. Okay, and that, folks, is all I have time for. As usual, I'll post links for all the shows and auditions mentioned on my social media pages, as well as some others that I've not had the chance to feature. Thanks so much for listening to me and Callan ramble on, and tune in again soon for what will no doubt be another gripping jaunt behind the scenes at a venue near you. Until then, take care of yourselves and go watch some theatre. Bye.